Doomsday Book, Cassette 5.
Someone was touching her. She opened her eyes. It was the mother-in-law. She was examining Kivrin's hands, turning them over and over again in hers, rubbing her chapped forefinger along the backs, scrutinizing the nails. When she saw Kivrin's eyes were open, she dropped her hands, as if in disgust, and said,
"De wurst, of liebreich, but less, but were der Wukenscher as fault you?"
Nothing. Kivrin had hoped that somehow, while she slept, the interpreter's enhancers would have sorted and deciphered everything she'd heard, and she would wake to find the interpreter working. But their words were still unintelligible. It sounded a little like French, with its dropped endings and delicate rising inflections. But Kivrin knew Norman French. Mr. Dunworthy had made her learn it, and she couldn't make out any of the words.
"Hast thou no de presta?"
the old woman said. It sounded like a question. But all French sounded like a question. The old woman took hold of Kivrin's arm with one rough hand and put her other arm around her, as if to help her up. "I'm too ill to get up," Kivrin thought. "Why would she make me get up? To be questioned? To be burned?" The younger woman came into the room, carrying a footed cup. She set it down on the window seat and came to take Kivrin's other arm. "Estontina tu llorosa?" she asked, smiling her gap-toothed smile at Kivrin, and Kivrin thought, "Maybe they're taking me to the bathroom," and made an effort to sit up and put her legs over the side of the bed. She was immediately dizzy. She sat, her bare legs dangling over the side of the high bed, waiting for it to pass. She was wearing her linen shift and nothing else. She wondered where her clothes were. At least they'd let her keep her shift. People in the Middle Ages didn't usually wear anything to bed. People in the Middle Ages didn't have indoor plumbing either, she thought, and hoped she wouldn't have to go outside to a privy. Castles sometimes had enclosed guard robes, or corners over a shaft that had to be cleaned out at the bottom. But this wasn't a castle. The young woman put a thin, folded blanket around Kivrin's shoulders like a shawl, and they both helped her off the bed. The planked wooden floor was icy. She took a few steps and was dizzy all over again. "I'll never make it all the way outside," she thought.
"Wotten se woot na duo yose de jardin?"
the old woman said sharply, and Kivrin thought she recognized jardin, the French for garden. But why would they be discussing gardens? "Flanoué mon holobanoué," the young woman said, putting her arm around Kivrin and draping Kivrin's arm over her shoulders. The old woman gripped her other arm with both hands. She scarcely came to Kivrin's shoulder, and the young woman didn't look like she weighed more than 90 pounds, but between them, they walked her to the end of the bed. Kivrin got dizzier with every step. "I'll never make it all the way outside," she thought. But they had stopped at the end of the bed. There was a chest there, a low wooden box with a bird or possibly an angel carved roughly into the top. On it lay a wooden basin full of water, the bloody bandage that had been around Kivrin's forehead, and a smaller empty bowl. Kivrin, concentrating on not falling over, didn't realize what it was until the old woman said,
"Dun namur dua ag pundre yoresetta,"
and pantomimed lifting her heavy skirts and sitting on it. "A chamber pot," Kivrin thought gratefully. Mr. Dunworthy, chamber pots were extant in country village manor houses in 1320. She nodded to show that she understood, and let them ease her down onto it. Though she was so dizzy, she had to grab at the heavy bed hangings to keep from falling. And her chest hurt so badly when she tried to stand up again that she doubled over.
Misery! The old woman shouted toward the door. Misery, kumo terer hopun!
And the inflection indicated clearly that she was calling someone. Marjorie? Mary? To come and help? But no one appeared. So perhaps she was wrong about that too. She straightened a little, testing the pain, and then tried to stand up, and the pain had lessened a little. But they still had to nearly carry her back to the bed, and she was exhausted by the time she was back under the bed coverings. She closed her eyes.
Le ponton, donu paudaton,
the young woman said. And she had to be saying, rest, or go to sleep. But she still couldn't decipher it. The interpreter's broken, she thought. And the little knot of panic started to form again, worse than the pain in her chest.
Can't be broken, she told herself. It's not a machine. It's a chemical syntax, a memory enhancer. It can't be broken.
It could only work with words in its memory, though. And obviously Mr. Latimer's Middle English was useless.
One that April with his shoe rest soaked.
Mr. Latimer's pronunciations were so far off the interpreter couldn't recognize what it was hearing as the same words. But that didn't mean it was broken. It only meant it had to collect new data, and the few sentences it had heard so far weren't enough.
It recognized the Latin, she thought.
And the panic stabbed at her again, but she resisted it. It had been able to recognize the Latin because the rite of extreme unction was a set piece. She had already known what words should be there. The words the women spoke weren't a set piece, but they were still decipherable. Proper names, forms of address, nouns and verbs and prepositional phrases would appear in set positions that repeated again and again. They would separate themselves out rapidly, and the interpreter would be able to use them as the key to the rest of the code. And what she needed to do now was collect data, listen to what was said without even trying to understand it, and let the interpreter work.
Din kuara huwendis mutala?
The young woman asked.
God tell on what is,
the old woman said. A bell began to ring far away. Kivrin opened her eyes. Both women had turned to look at the window, even though they couldn't see through the linen.
Birich par Gansanen,
the young woman said. The old woman didn't answer. She was staring at the window, as if she could see past the stiffened linen, her hands clasped in front of her as if in prayer.
I strip. Easter Favre Blown,
the young woman said, and in spite of her resolution, Kivrin tried to make it into, it is time for Vespers, or there is the Vespers bell. But it wasn't Vespers. The bell went on tolling, and no other bells joined in. She wondered if it was the bell she'd heard before, ringing all alone in the late afternoon. The old woman turned abruptly away from the window.
Nay, Elvis, he's van de Wolfen.
She picked up the chamber pot from the wooden chest.
Go on, was his bid.
There was a sudden scuffling outside the door, a sound of footsteps running upstairs and a child's voice crying,
Mother, there's Mutter May.
A little girl burst into the room, blonde braids and cap strings flying, nearly colliding with the old woman and the chamber pot. The child's round face was red and smeared with tears.
You're your lad lost for Shamanos,
the old woman growled at her, lifting the treacherous bowl out of reach.
You're a man Narunsonos.
The little girl paid no attention to her. She ran straight at the young woman, sobbing.
Will someone hurt my schmerter, Moda?
Kivrin gasped. Moda? That had to be Mother. The little girl held up her arms, and her mother, oh yes, definitely Mother, picked her up. She fastened her arms around her mother's neck and began to howl.
Shh, Anchus, shush,
the mother said. That guttural's a G, Kivrin thought. A hacking German G.
Shh, Agnes.
Still holding her, the mother sat down on the window seat. She wiped at the tears with the tail of her coif.
Speaker now, die Hose befalls Agnes.
Yes, definitely Agnes. And Specken was Tal. Tell me what happened.
Sales my sweater,
Agnes said, pointing at another child who had just come into the room. The second girl was considerably older, 9 or 10 at least. She had long brown hair that hung down her back and was held in place by a dark blue kerchief.
It gunna so Agnes,
she said.
The picture ran in gown disgrace.
And there was no mistaking that combination of affection and contempt. She didn't look like the blonde little girl, but Kivrin was willing to bet this dark-haired girl was the little one's older sister.
She picked her in against Iris, mother.
Mother again. And she was she. And picked her must be foul. Sounded French, but the key to this was German. The pronunciations, the constructions were German. Kivrin could almost feel it click into place.
Na confit ho das always,
the older woman said.
Schaut na wunders. Kur teres bin for not miss gain by pitié.
Honi gan fru bloody, the woman said. But Kivrin couldn't hear her. She was hearing instead the interpreter's translation, still clumsy and obviously more than a beat behind, but a translation. Don't pamper her, Elise. She is not injured. Her tears are but to get your attention. And the mother, whose name was Elise, her knee is bleeding.
Rosmund, Brangund ovest von Kofre,
she said, pointing at the foot of the bed, and the interpreter was right behind her. Rosmund, fetch me the cloth on the chest. The 10-year-old moved immediately toward the trunk at the foot of the bed. The older girl was Rosmund, and the little one was Agnes, and the impossibly young mother in her wimple and coif was Eloise. Rosmund held out a frayed cloth that must surely be the one Eloise had taken off Kivrin's forehead.
Touch it not,
Agnes screamed, and Kivrin wouldn't have even needed the interpreter for that one. It was still far more than a beat behind.
I would but tie a cloth to stop the bleeding,
Eloise said, taking the rag from Rosmund. Agnes tried to push it away.
The cloth will not...
There was a blank space, as if the interpreter didn't know a word, and then...
You, Agnes?
The word was obviously hurt or harm, and Kivrin wondered if the interpreter had not had the word in its memory, and why it couldn't have come up with an approximation from context.
We'll pronounce,
Agnes shouted, and the interpreter echoed, it will, and then the blank again. Space must be so that she could hear the actual word and make her own guess at its meaning. It wasn't a bad idea, but the interpreter was so far behind the space that Kivrin couldn't hear the word she was intended to. If the interpreter did this every time it didn't recognize a word, she was in serious trouble.
It will pronounce,
Agnes wailed, pushing her mother's hand away from her knee. It will pain, the interpreter whispered. And Kivrin felt relieved that it had managed to come up with something, even though to pain was scarcely a verb.
How came you to fall?
Eloise asked to distract Agnes.
She was running up the stairs, Rosamond said. She was running to give you the news that had come.
The interpreter left a space again, but Kivrin caught the word this time. Garwin, which was probably a proper name, and the interpreter had apparently reached the same conclusion, because by the time Agnes had shrieked,
I would have told Mother Garwin had come,
The interpreter included it in the translation.
I would have told, Agnes said, really crying now, and buried her face against her mother,
who promptly took advantage of the opportunity to tie the bandage around Agnes's knee.
You can tell me now, she said.
Agnes shook her buried head.
You tie the bandage too loosely, daughter-in-law, the elder woman said. It will but fall away.
The bandage looked tight enough to Kivrin, and obviously any attempt to bind the wound tighter would result in renewed screams. The old woman was still holding the chamber pot in both hands. Kivrin wondered why she didn't go empty it. Eloise said, rocking the little girl gently and patting her back. I would fain have you tell me.
Pride goes before a fall, the old woman said, seemingly determined to make Agnes cry again. You were to blame that you fell. You should not have run on the stairs.
Was Garwin riding a white mare?
Eloise asked.
A white mare?
Kivrin wondered if Garwin could be the man who had helped her onto his horse and brought her to the manor.
Nay,
Agnes said in a tone that indicated her mother had made some sort of joke.
He was riding his own black stallion Gringolet, and he rode up to me and said, Good Lady Agnes, I would speak with your mother.
Rosamond, your sister was hurt because of your carelessness, the old woman said.
She hadn't succeeded in upsetting Agnes, so she decided to go after some other victim.
Why were you not tending her?
I was at my broidery,
Rosamond said, looking to her mother for support.
Maisry was to keep watch over her.
Maisry went out to see Garwin,
Agnes said, sitting up on her mother's lap.
And dally with the stable boy, the old woman said.
She went to the door and shouted, Maisry!
Maisry.
That was the name the old woman had called out before. And now the interpreter wasn't even leaving spaces when it came to proper names. Kivrin didn't know who Maisry was, probably a servant. But if the way things were going was any indication, Maisry was going to be in a lot of trouble. The old woman was determined to find a victim, and the missing Maisry seemed perfect.
Maisry!
She shouted again, and the name echoed. Rosamond took the opportunity to go and stand beside her mother.
Garwin bade us tell you he begged leave to come and speak with you.
Waits he below? Eloise asked.
Nay, he went first to the church to speak of the lady with Father Rock.
Pride goes before a fall.
The interpreter was obviously getting overconfident. Father Rolf, perhaps, or Father Peter. Obviously not Father Rock. Why went he to speak to Father Rock?
The old woman demanded, coming back into the room.
Kivrin tried to hear the real word under the maddening whisper of the translation.
Roche? The French word for rock? Father Roche.
Mayhap he has found somewhat of the lady,
Eloise said, glancing at Kivrin. It was the first indication she or anyone had given that they remembered Kivrin was in the room. Kivrin quickly closed her eyes to make them think she was asleep, so they would go on discussing her.
Garwin rode out this morning to seek the ruffians, Eloise said.
Kivrin opened her eyes to slit, but she was no longer looking at her.
Mayhap he has found them.
She bent and tied the dangling strings of Agnes's linen cap.
Agnes, go to the church with Rosamond, and tell Garwin we would speak with him in the hall.
The lady sleeps.
We must not disturb her.
Agnes darted for the door, shouting,
I would be the one to tell him, Rosamond. Rosamond,
Let your sister tell. Eloise called after them. Agnes, do not run. The girls disappeared out the door and down the invisible stairs, obviously running.
Rosamond is near grown, the old woman said. It is not seemly for her to run after your husband's men. Ill will come of your daughters being untended. You would do wisely to send to Oxenford for a nurse.
No, Eloise said, with a firmness Kivrin wouldn't have guessed at. Maisry can watch over them.
Maisry is not fit to watch sheep. We should not have come from Bath in such haste. Certes, we could have waited till...
Something.
The interpreter left a gap again, and Kivrin didn't recognize the phrase, but she had caught the important facts. They had come from Bath. They were near Oxford.
Let Garwin fetch a nurse and a leech woman to see to the lady.
We will send for no one, Eloise said.
To
another place name the interpreter couldn't manage.
Lady Evold has repute with injuries, and she would gladly lend us one of her waiting women for a nurse.
No, Eloise said. We will tend ourselves. Father Roche.
Father Roche, she said contemptuously. He knows naught of medicine.
But I understand everything, he said, Kivrin thought. She remembered his quiet voice chanting the last rites, his gentle touch on her temples, her palms, the soles of her feet. He had told her not to be afraid, and asked her her name, and held her hand.
If the lady is of noble birth, the older woman said, would you have it told you let an ignorant village priest tend her? Lady Evold,
we will send for no one, Eloise said, and for the first time Kivrin realized she was afraid. My husband bade us keep here till he come.
He had sooner have come with us.
You know he could not, Eloise said. He will come when he can.
I must go to speak with Garwin, she said, walking past the old woman to the door.
Garwin told me he would search the place where first he found the lady to seek for signs of her attackers. Mayhap he has found somewhat that will tell us what she is. The place where first he found the lady. Garwin was the man who had found her. The man with the red hair and the kind face, who had helped her onto his horse and brought her here. That much at least she hadn't dreamed, though she must have dreamed the white horse. He had brought her here, and he knew where the drop was.
Wait, Kivrin said.
She pushed herself up against the pillows.
Wait, please. I would speak with Garwin.
The women stopped. Eloise came around beside the bed, looking alarmed.
I would speak with the man called Garwin, Kivrin said carefully, waiting before each word until she had the translation. Eventually the process would be automatic. But for now, she thought the word and then waited till the interpreter translated it and repeated it out loud.
I must discover this place where he found me.
Eloise laid a hand on Kivrin's forehead, and Kivrin brushed it impatiently away.
I would speak with Garwin, she said.
He has no fever, Imione,
Eloise said to the old woman,
and yet she tries to speak, though she knows we cannot understand her.
She speaks in a foreign tongue,
Imione said, making it sound criminal.
Mayhap she is a French spy.
I'm not speaking French, Kivrin said. I'm speaking Middle English.
Mayhap it is Latin,
Eloise said, Father Roche said she spoke in Latin when he shrove her.
Father Roche can still say his Pater Noster, Lady Hermione said. We should send to...
The unrecognizable name again. Kersey? Corsi? I would speak with Garwin, Kivrin said in Latin.
Nay,
Eloise said. We will await my husband.
The old woman wheeled angrily, slopping the contents of the chamber pot onto her hand. She wiped it off onto her skirt and went out the door, slamming it shut behind her. Eloise started after her. Kivrin grabbed at her hands.
Why don't you understand me? She said. I understand you. I have to talk to Garwin. He has to tell me where the drop is.
Eloise disengaged Kivrin's hand.
There. You mustn't cry, she said kindly. Try to sleep. You must rest, so you can go home.
Transcript from the Doomsday Book. I'm in a lot of trouble, Mr. Dunworthy. I don't know where I am, and I can't speak the language. Something's gone wrong with the interpreter. I can understand some of what the contempt say, but they can't understand me at all. And that's not the worst of it. I've caught some sort of disease. I don't know what it is. It's not the plague, because I don't have any of the right symptoms. And because I'm getting better. And I had a plague inoculation. I had all my inoculations and T-cell enhancement and everything. But one of them must not have worked. Or else this is some Middle Ages disease there aren't any inoculations for. The symptoms are headache and fever and dizziness, and I get a pain in my chest when I try to move. I was delirious for a while, which is why I don't know where I am. A man named Garwin brought me here on his horse, but I don't remember very much about the trip, except that it was dark and it seemed to take hours. I'm hoping I was wrong and the fever made it seem longer, and I'm in Miss Montoya's village after all. It could be Skengate. I remember a church, and I think this is a manor house. I'm in a bedroom or a solar, and it's not just a loft because there are stairs. That means the house of a minor baron, at least. There's a window, and as soon as the dizziness subsides, I'll climb up on the window seat and see if I can see the church. It has a bell. It rang for Vespers just now. The one at Miss Montoya's village didn't have a bell tower. And that makes me afraid I'm not in the right place. I know we're fairly close to Oxford because one of the contempts talked about fetching a doctor from there. It's also close to a village called Kersey or Corsi, which is not one of the villages on the map of Miss Montoya's I memorized, but that could be the name of the landowner. Because of being out of my head, I'm not sure of my temporal location either. I've been trying to remember, and I think I've only been ill 2 days. But it might be more. And I can't ask them what day it is, because they don't understand me. And I can't get out of bed without falling over. And they've cut my hair off, and I don't know what to do. What happened? Why won't the interpreter work? Why didn't the T-cell enhancement? Break. There's a rat under my bed. I can hear it scrabbling in the dark. Chapter 11. They couldn't understand her. Kivrin had tried to communicate with Eloise, to make her understand, but she had merely smiled kindly, uncomprehendingly, and told Kivrin to rest.
Please,
Kivrin had said as Eloise started for the door, don't leave. This is important. Garwin is the only one who knows where the drop is.
Sleep,
Eloise said. I will be back in a little.
You have to let me see him,
Kivrin said desperately, but Eloise was already nearly to the door.
I don't know where the drop is.
There was a clattering on the stairs. Eloise opened the door and said, Agnes, I bade you go tell. She stopped in mid-sentence and took a step back. She did not look frightened or even upset, but her hand on the lintel jerked a little, as if she would have slammed the door, and Kivrin's heart began to pound. This is it, she thought wildly. They've come to take me to the stake.
Good morning, my lady,
a man's voice said.
Your daughter Rosamond told me I would find you in Hall, but I did not.
He came into the room. Kivrin couldn't see his face. He was standing at the foot of the bed, hidden from her by the hangings. She tried to shift her head so she could see him, but the movement made her head spin violently. She lay back down.
I thought I would find you with the wounded lady, the man said.
He was wearing a padded jerkin and leather hose,
and a sword. She could hear it clank as he took a step forward. How does she?
She fares better today, Aloise said. My husband's mother has gone to brew her a decoction of wound wort for her injuries. She had taken her hand from the door, and his comment about your daughter Rosamond surely meant that this was Garwin, the man she had sent to look for Kivrin's attackers. But Eloise had taken two more steps backward as he spoke, and her face looked guarded, wary. The thought of danger flickered through Kivrin's mind again, and she wondered suddenly if she might have not dreamed Mr. Dunworthy's cutthroat after all. If that man, with his cruel face, might be Garwin.
Found you aught that might tell us of the lady's identity?
Eloise said carefully.
Nay,
he said.
Her goods had all been stolen and the horses taken. I hoped the lady might tell me somewhat of her attackers. How many there were, and from what direction they came upon her.
I fear she cannot tell you anything, Eloise said.
Is she mute, then?
He said, and moved so she could see him. He was not so tall as Kivrin remembered him, standing over her, and his hair looked less red and more blonde in the daylight. But his face still looked as kind as when he had set her on his horse. His black horse, Gringolet. After he'd found her in the clearing. He was not the cutthroat. She had dreamed the cutthroat. Conjured him out of her delirium and Mr. Dunworthy's fears, along with the white horse and the Christmas carols. And she must be misunderstanding Eloise's reactions. The way she had misunderstood their getting her up to use the chamber pot.
She is not mute, but speaks in some strange tongue I do not know,
Eloise said.
I fear her injuries have addled her wit.
She came around to the side of the bed, and Garwin followed her.
Good lady, I have brought my husband's privé, Garwin.
Good day, my lady,
Garwin said, speaking slowly and over distinctly, as if he thought Kivrin were deaf.
It was he who found you in the woods,
Eloise said.
Where in the woods?
Kivrin thought desperately.
I am pleased that your wounds are healing,
Garwin said, emphasizing every word.
Can you tell me of the men who attacked you?
I don't know if I can tell you anything, she thought, afraid to speak for fear he wouldn't understand her either. He had to understand her. He knew where the drop was.
How many men were there?
Garwin said.
Were they on horseback?
Where did you find me? She thought, emphasizing the words the way Garwin had.
She waited for the interpreter to work out the whole sentence, listening carefully to the intonations, checking them against the language lessons Mr. Dunworthy had given her. Garwin and Eloise were waiting, watching her intently. She took a deep breath.
"Where did you find me?"
They exchanged quick glances. His surprised, hers saying plainly, "You see?" "She spoke thus that night," he said. "I thought it was her injury that made her speak so."
"And so I do," Eloise said. "My husband's mother thinks she is of France."
He shook his head. "It is not French she speaks."
He turned back to Kivrin.
"Good lady," he said, nearly shouting, "came you from another land?" "Yes," Kivrin thought, "another land, and the only way back is the drop, and only you know where it is."
"Where did you find me?"
she said again. "Her goods were all taken," Garwin said. "But her wagon was of rich make, and she had many boxes." Eloise nodded.
"I fear she is of high birth, and her people seeking her."
"In what part of the woods did you find me?" Kivrin said, her voice rising.
"We are upsetting her,"
Eloise said. She leaned over Kivrin and patted her hand.
"Take your rest."
She moved away from the bed, and Garwin followed. "Would you have me ride to Bath, to Lord Guillaume?" Garwin said, out of sight behind the hangings. Eloise stepped back the way she had when he first came in, as if she were afraid of him. But they had stood side by side at the bed, their hands nearly touching. They had spoken together like old friends. This wariness must be coming from something else. "Would you have me bring your husband?" Garwin said.
"Nay,"
Eloise said, looking down at her hands.
"My lord has enough to worry him, and he cannot leave until the trial is finished. And he bade you stay with us and guard us."
"By your leave, then, I will return to the place where the lady was set upon and search further."
"Aye,"
Eloise said, still not looking at him.
"In their haste, some token may have fallen to the ground nearby that will tell us of her." "The place where the lady was set upon,"
Kivrin recited under her breath, trying to hear his words under the interpreter's translation and memorize them.
"The place where I was set upon."
"I will take my leave and ride out again," Garwin said.
Eloise looked up at him. "Now?" she said.
"It grows dark." "Show me the place where I was set upon," Kivrin said. "I do not fear the dark, Lady Eloise," he said, and strode out, the sword clanking.
"Take me with you,"
Kivrin said. But it was no use. They were already gone, and the interpreter was broken. She had deceived herself into thinking it was working. She had understood what they were saying because of the language lessons Mr. Dunworthy had given her, not because of the interpreter. And perhaps she was only deceiving herself that she understood them. Perhaps the conversation had not been about who she was at all, but about something else altogether. Finding a missing sheep, or putting her on trial. The Lady Eloise had shut the door when they went out, and Kivrin couldn't hear anything. Even the tolling bell had stopped, and the light from the waxed linen was faintly blue. "It grows dark." Garwin had said he was going to ride back to the drop. If the window overlooked the courtyard, she might at least be able to see which way he rode out. "It is not far," he had said. If she could just see the direction he rode, she could find the drop herself. She pushed herself up in the bed, but even that much exertion made the pain in her chest stab again. She put her feet over the side, but the action made her dizzy. She lay back against the pillow and closed her eyes. Dizziness and fever and a pain in the chest. What were those symptoms of? Smallpox started out with fever and chills, and the pox didn't appear until the second or third day. She lifted her arm up to see if there were the beginnings of the pox. She had no idea how long she'd been ill, but it couldn't be smallpox because the incubation period was 10 to 21 days. 10 days ago she had been in hospital in Oxford, where the smallpox virus had been extinct for nearly 100 years. She had been in hospital, getting inoculated against all of them. Smallpox, typhoid fever, cholera, plague. So how could it be any of them? And if it wasn't any of them, what was it? St. Vitus's dance? She had told herself that before, that this was something she had not been vaccinated against. But she had had her immune system augmented too, to fight off any infection. There was a sound of running on stairs.
Mother!
A voice that she already recognized as Agnes's shouted.
Rosamond waited not!
She didn't burst into the room with quite as much violence because the heavy door was shut and she had to push it open. But as soon as she had squeezed through, she raced for the window seat, wailing.
Mother! I would have told Garwin!
She sobbed and then stopped. When she saw her mother wasn't in the room, the tears stopped too, Kivrin noticed. Agnes stood by the window for a minute, as if she were debating whether to try the scene at a later time, and then ran back to the door. Halfway there, she spied Kivrin and stopped again.
I know who you are,
she said, coming around to the side of the bed. She was scarcely tall enough to see over the bed. Her cap strings had come undone again.
You are the Lady Garwin found in the wood.
Kivrin was afraid that her answer, garbled as the interpreter obviously made it, would frighten the little girl. She pushed herself up a little against the pillows and nodded.
What befell your hair? Agnes asked. Did the robber steal it?
Kivrin shook her head, smiling at the odd idea.
Maisry says the robber stole your tongue, Agnes said.
She pointed at Kivrin's forehead.
Hurt you your head?
Kivrin nodded.
I hurt my knee,
she said, and tried to pick it up with both hands so Kivrin could see the dirty bandage. The old woman was right. It was already slipping. She could see the wound under it. Kivrin had supposed it was just a skin knee, but the wound looked fairly deep. Agnes tottered, let go of the knee, and leaned against the bed again.
Will you die?
I don't know, Kivrin thought, thinking of the pain in her chest. The mortality rate for smallpox had been 75% in 1320, and her augmented immune system wasn't working.
Brother Hubert died, Agnes said wisely, and Gilbert. He fell from his horse. I saw him. His head was all red. Rosamond said Brother Hubert died of the blue sickness.
This ends side one of cassette 5. Please turn the cassette over and start side 2 at the same point.